James chapter 5, verse 11. Behold, we count them happy which endure. We have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tenderness. We have heard the patience of Job, and we know the end that the Lord worked out. Turn back now to the book of Job, shall we? Chapter 1. In verses 1 to 5, we are introduced to the man. In verses 6 to 12, we are introduced to the council chamber of deity. Verses 14 to 19, 13 to 19, we read about the storms that broke upon his life. And in the last three verses of chapter 1, we have his response. Now later on we'll pass the second chapter, but just let me read you an extract, please, from chapter 1. Verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, Whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth? A perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth or shunneth or abstaineth from evil. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast thou not made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hand, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will cast thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath is in thine power, only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. Verse 20. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head, fell down upon the ground and worshipped, saying, Naked came I out of my mother's womb, naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishness. Now you must keep your Bibles handy, please, for big things are before us tonight. You have heard of the patience. God put this man into the crucible. The fire burned very hot. The waters ran very deep. Ultimately and finally, Job emerged having increased his knowledge of God and of himself, he'll be twice the man he was. The fact that so much space is devoted to him indicates the importance of what God has to teach us. The usual approach, quite biblical betimes, is that a man reaps as he sows. If you sin, you suffer. Unfortunately, that's not true here, for Job had sinned. His three friends came along to share with him in his suffering, stayed to criticize. In their straitjacket of theology, they could only see that if this man is suffering, he must have sinned. We're all wrong. That introduces me now, just for a moment, to teach you a little about chastening and discipline. The inspired writer to the Hebrews says, whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. You'll learn two things from that verse. The first thing you'll learn is this: whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. But usually when we are in circumstances we don't like, we begin to question the fact about God's love. We say, if God loves us, why does he allow it? Yet the scriptures teach that he allows it because he loves you. Secondly, he scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. So this discipline comes because you are a son of God, not to make you one. Now, godly discipline takes three forms. First of all, it will take the form of retribution. You can't suffer for your sin. Secondly, discipline can be preventative. That is, you are put into circumstances which can prevent you from sinning and make you a partaker of God's holiness. Thirdly, chastening can be educated. It can teach you about God and about yourself and about a thousand others. Listen carefully, huh? Discipline can be retributive. You can suffer for your sin. The example is David. David suffered for his sin. You will remember his sin. He committed adultery with Uriah the Hittite's wife Bathsheba. And he committed murder by proxy when he got others to kill her husband. God said to him, the sword shall never depart from thine house. At the end of the road, he says, although my house be not so with God, never forget, David's family never went wrong till he went wrong. That is, so you can suffer for sin. Chastening can be preventative. The example is Paul. 2 Corinthians 12, remember, lest I should be exalted above measure. It was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. Paul got the thorn to keep him steady. There's no saying what might have happened if that thorn was prevented because of the abundance of the revelations to keep me humble. All of us invariably carry something we'd rather be without. That's the thing that keeps you in balance. Finally, in this connection, chastening can be educative. The example is Job. He came under the hand of God. Now let's come again. Invariably, we connect suffering with sin, and we try in our minds to connect prior sin with present chastening. You can't do that with Job. You can't do it. There was only one other way to look at it. to look at the circumstance in the light of the future and judge it in the light of the goal that is to be reached. Chastening for the present seemeth not joyous, but grievous, but afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruits of righteousness. Got that? Afterward it be. The Lord said to his own in John 13, what I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. And ye have heard of the patience of Job, and ye know the end of the law. So many a time you have to take into account circumstances and endeavor to view them in the light of the ultimate. You'll find oftentimes your friends won't help you. This man's friends didn't help. They came to offer sympathy and finished up attacking him. It never struck them that when a man or a woman's going through deep waters, it's compassion they need, not criticism. They need help. They don't need self-appointed judges to try and read the will of God for them. So here we come. And at the end, ye know the end of the law. At the end of it all, there's no detailed explanation about it all. The compensation was that he had a vision of God. I have seen thee. Ultimately the vision of God at the end of it all will compensate. Make a man twice what he was before. The trouble is we don't like the road that God would educate us. Now what? Verses 1 to 5 were introduced to this man, a wealthy farmer. He had everything that a man would want. Prosperous business, wife and family. There were occasions when his children held a party. And when they did so, Job gave himself to prayer. Just per chance, well, he was wise enough to know. Just per chance they might not act the same when I'm not there as they do when I am there.
Yeah.
But that, you parents listening, don't be so foolish as to think that they might just always act the same way. He wasn't blind to the faults. He recognized he couldn't shelter them all the time. He realized at times it was better to pray than deny. That circumstances could be controlled by prayer. And so, whenever they held these social occasions, this man gave himself to offering and to prayer. Thus did Job continually. Are you listening to me? For this is the thing. This constant godliness, this praying about your family, is your only hope when the crisis comes. But if you're not living godly, you'll never survive. This is our trouble. We live sometimes as much without God as we can, and then when the trouble comes, we expect to get right through to God, and God to come in as if we had walked with him all the time. Have you got that? Godliness pays in the crisis. The crisis doesn't make the man who reveals it. Now, I read to you verses 6 to 12. I want to spend a little time on this. Now, before I begin to expound this, let me draw your attention to something. Whenever the storm hit this man, ultimately he'll lose his business and his family. I want you to understand that sitting here tonight reading this, you know more than he knew on the storm broke. He didn't know what had taken place up there between God and Satan. We know that he did. Now keep that in mind. Because when it all happens, the heavens are silent. And he doesn't suspect that the devil is behind it. All he thinks about is what most godly men would think of women. God is among them. So he did. God allowed Satan to attack him. So in the end, this man will face it back to God. And that's what Satan thought he would do. Then he tried to undermine his confidence in God by saying, that's the kind of God you've got. You have to please him. You see what happens to you. Mind you, we've got the same idea that if we are going on with God, God must bless us materially. It's all wrong. It's all wrong. Job could have thought that in Old Testament days, that was the principle. But not now. Our blessings are spiritual, not material. Many godly folks never are well off by any means. You listening to me? Come again. Now, verses 6 to 12, you have this council chamber of deity. This angelic administrative assembly that meets from time to time. I haven't time to develop this, but that's what happens. And on this day, Satan appeared with the angels. Now, drop your eye, please, to verses 6 and 7. Now, we're now going to listen to verses 6 to 12, to a conversation between God and Satan. Got that? And when Satan enters this assembly, God addresses him. And he says to him, here, in verse 7, whence comest thou? And Satan replies, he says, from going to and fro on the earth, and from walking up and down in all very vain. But people are always vain when they're up to no good. People are always evasive. Like Satan. Now please, very carefully now, follow me, will you? Verses 8 to 11. Verse 8, the challenge of God to Satan. Okay? The challenge of God to Satan. Verses 9 to 11, the challenge of Satan to God. Verse 12, divine permission, the permission of God to Satan. Got that? The challenge of God, verse 8, the challenge of Satan, 9 to 11, the permission of God, 12. Now, I bring you to this. In order to give you the background to the deluge of sorrow that this man experienced. Verse 8. The Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in all the earth? A perfect and upright man, a man that feareth God and abstaineth from evil. And God brought Satan's attention to Job. Stop. Stop. God doesn't know this. That what's going to happen to him now is because God boasted about him to Satan. God thought greatly of this man. And so he took the opportunity to draw Satan's attention to him. And that became the ground of Satan's attack upon him. I want to ask you something. Would you like God to boast about you? Come on. Would you like God to boast to Satan about you? Would you be able to face up to this? Well, you and I have had nothing like it. It's an extreme case because it's intended to cover every case. Ask thou, could God point it out? Now listen carefully. Point it out, because in the ultimate, God's confidence is not so much resting in Job personally, but God's confidence is resting upon his work. ultimately and take the man through. And God's confidence in his own work. Have you learned much of it, Lord? One. I'm not asking you if you learned about God. Have you learned God? Could God have confidence in you to go through a trial? Until ultimately you're left with nothing but a naked faith in God. That faith will take you through when everything else is against you. Or that all these years been in vain, brother. And we've learned little or nothing. For the times I said in Toronto this last 2 weeks, Christianity is not imposed from the outside. Christianity grows from the inside. You're renewed in your mind. You're changed inwardly. The main difference. Then the fruit of Christianity flows out. It's not imposed upon the outside. Now, I don't know where you come from, please. I'm not being critical. Is the brand of Christianity that you practice and what you've been taught is this? You don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do the next thing? That's legalism, which you never knew when they talked about legalism. That's legalism. They're putting you under law. You don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do the next thing. Now, why should they make the rules and regulations? I'll tell you. Simply because that these Christian features are not flowing out in your life. You haven't been changed inwardly, so you're not showing them outwardly. So they want to make you conform. So they give you the rules and regulations. It never accomplishes anything because you haven't been changed inside. Most of us are far too busy for God. You have time to work inwardly. Have you got it? Now this man had the light that you and I have got, but God has worked in them. And God is confident in the man. So confident, he could boast to Satan about him. That's good. That's the Dr. I now to verses 9 to 11. Satan's answer is challenge to God. Okay? Verse 9, he challenges God's estimate of Job. You don't think he's serving you for nothing. Verse 10, he charges God with bribery. You bribe the man. That's why he's got him. Verse 11, he dares God to remove the protection and let him at Satan at him. Have you got that? Verse 9, he challenges God's destiny. Verse 10, he charges God with bribery. Verse 11, he challenges, he dares God to remove the seeming edge. Now we're coming, please, to deal with the psychology of Satan. These folks here, some of them here from Toronto, have known that time and again throughout the fortnight I've spoken about Bible psychology. Here's the psychology of Satan, this is the psychology of hell, and in some ways it's very sound psychology. The devil knows what he's about, mind you, I'll point out in a moment, he's got his weaknesses and deficiencies, but he's interested in you. He wants to break your confidence in God when things go wrong. So, he says to God, you don't think really, do you? That this man's serving you for nothing? Does Job fear God fear you for nothing? He's challenging God's excellence. He says, you don't really think, do you? That this man fears you because of what you are in yourself. No. Now watch. Watch now. Satan is cynical. Cynicism is the essence of the satanic. Listen to me. The devil does not believe that there is anything truly good. neither the godliness of Job nor the generation nor the generosity of Paul. He's cynical. I don't believe that this man does it because he loves you. Does it because of you yourself? Secondly, he's sneering. Godliness is a way of gain. That's why the man's fearing. That's why he's going on with all this religion. Do you remember in 1 Timothy 6? Paul exposes the false teachers as thinking that godliness is a way of gain. That's at the very heart of heresy. You'd be a man for preaching and godliness becomes a way of gain. No matter how godly he is, he's now contracting to serve God for so much money. Vain pastors are all wrong, just as wrong as a vain clergyman. Verse 10. Now I said, listen, you've got them. You've got a hedge around them. You've shut them in. More than that, you've prospered his business. Isn't that right? He said to him, thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. Look at his flocks and herds, his thousands of them. It's all bribery. It pays God's job to be godly. His godliness is a byproduct of prosperity. Now you listen to me. Because the challenge will be coming just in a minute or two. For maybe things mean more to our Christianity than we're prepared to admit. Oh, this is deep. Very challenging. So he challenges God. You see, if Job goes through and survives, it will vindicate Job, it will justify God. But if this man fails, then it will be proved that God is right, and he only did it for what God gave him. So that the whole character of God is at stake as well as Job. Now, watch now. I gave it the title Divine Permission, the Permission of God. Is that right? Satan is to acknowledge it. He says, do forth your hand and touch it. While he was reading this, you allow me to get at him and I'll show you different. You put forth your hand and touch all that you have, the thing. Curse you to your face. That's the challenge. Remember this, Job didn't know anything about this. So Satan went out from the presence of God. Now just allow me to draw you on your intelligence. You remember what happened now, don't you? Now remember Job. Job is there. All unsuspecting. Hasn't a clue about what's going to happen. He doesn't know anything about the conversation. Just going about his daily business when suddenly a messenger arrives. The Sabaeans, marauding bands have come. They've taken all the animals and slain all the young men except me. That was a natural thing. Marauding bands. He's no sooner said it, Job began to wonder, say, well, after all, I suppose this sort of thing happens. When suddenly a second messenger comes running. And he says, lightning came, the fire of God struck. The oxen and all are gone. The men have been killed, and I only am left. What's this? An act of God. You couldn't foresee that, could you? See how clever Satan is? And you can understand how he's affecting this man. That's nearly half, three quarters of a business gone. And suddenly another man comes running. And he says, The Chaldeans came, desert brigands. And he says, they've taken all the camels. The men are dead, I only am left. So his whole business has collapsed. Another man coming. Near eyes, he says, there came a great wind, a tempest, a cyclone from the wilderness. Family's gone. Ten. The men are dead, I only am left. So his whole business has collapsed. Another man coming. Near eyes, he says, there came a great wind, a tempest, a cyclone from the wilderness. Family's gone. Ten. Now, I don't know how long was between the messengers. If there was time between, then there he is wondering what all happened, unsuspecting about God or the devil. Maybe thinking, well, why does God allow it? And suddenly he's hit again. He's time just to assimilate it and take it in, he's hit again. Or if they came rapidly, one, two, three, four. His world clashes about his feet. He's lost his business. He's lost his family, not one by one over a number of years, ten of them, just like that, they're all gone. In a moment or so, he's been reduced from a millionaire to a pauper. You can hardly take it in. Hardly take it in. Satan's buffeting. Satan's attacking his mind. He wants to destroy his confidence. He wants to raise bitterness in his soul. He wants to turn him away from God. He wants him to curse God and not bless. He's bugging him. Bugging him. Battering him. Pummeling him. You hardly think a man could have seen that. How will he react? Heaven and hell is watching. Heaven and hell is watching. I want to tell you something. How you react in circumstances similar can either be an encouragement or a discouragement to other people. If you can trust God when everything's against you, people will take note. It's easy to trust God when things go well. Nearly anybody could do that. You see, Satan's psychology was this. This is very sound. A man's faith can only be seen by testing. It was Christ coming, wasn't it? You've surrounded them with everything. You've blessed them. You've sheltered them. You've hedged them in. It's all right, you boasted. Mind you, I know God knew all about the inside. You were boasting about this man. He's never been tested. Let's test them and see. All right, says God, on you go. And you see, Satan can make mistakes. He's not divine. He's only a created being. Satan can make mistakes. It has never occurred to Satan about the work of God in a man or a woman's soul that could survive us. It has never occurred to him that the crisis might reveal the man in a way that he never thought of. The job has become the battlefield, the battleground between God and Satan. What can I now, please? Just a minute, Al. You know about what happened? Job arose and worshipped him. Stop a minute. Stop. Listen to me. Supposing you lost everything, how would you react? Now let's suppose now that the business collapsed. Everyone. Supposing that you're to sell your house, or houses, I'm not interested. Supposing you're to sell your car, or your cars. God produced to you, who you had nothing, by a series of blows. And you had
either to go down, I think, to what you call the welfare. Or you now have to be dependent on the brethren. Would you be as devoted a week after as before? Would you be up in the Lord's day morning and through the week on your feet blessing God? Would, or is it possibly true that as far as you and I are concerned, Satan is like, things be more to us and to our Christianity than we're prepared to admit? Would a man love God just for himself? Would a man say, fear God for nothing? God says yes. The devil says no. What do you think? Come on, what do you think? Just you ponder that. I'm not denying you your comfort. I covet neither your money nor your water, nor your goods. I'm only saying, does that take up much bigger place in your life than you compare to it? Do you love God for what He is, what He gives? I would not meet, and you're old. How old are you? Yes. Heaven and hell is watching. Year old, bent his mantle, shaved his head, fell down upon the ground. You care to drop your eyes to their spine, you'll find this man's devotion while his children were having good times. And it says, when it tells you about his offering and his prayer, thus did Job continually, life perchance for sin. Thus did Job continually, and when the storm came and broke and he's lost everything, he's still worshipping. He's still praying. His godliness and consistency has enabled him to contain these. He was able to hold in perspective because of the discipline of his inner life. You'll still pray and watch. That's what I hold. You practice it. You read your Bible. Come on now, you read it today. Listen to me. No one in this building is spiritual enough to leave the house any morning without reading and praying. Now, you're not spiritual enough for that. You might think you are. You take my advice. You read a verse in the morning. You can meditate upon the time through the day. It only becomes fruit to your soul when you meditate on it and think about it. Right? Thus did Job continue. Daniel will, when the crisis comes, open his window as he did aforetime. Have you got it? Godliness will preserve you. Come again. Verse 21. Now listen to his dramatic reaction. What did he think about it all? Naked. Came I out of my mother's womb? Naked shall I return thither? How true. How true. Listen to Paul, verse 76. You brought nothing into the world. You just kept and you'll take nothing out. All that you've amassed is only luggage. No need to leave it behind. You used to say in the old country, there's no pockets in the shroud. You may say this is none of my business. Are you quite entitled to make your judgment on me and what I say, please? Quite free to do that. I want to tell you that I believe there's a day of account coming for many Christians who have left their money to their family and relatives that squandered it. Money that God gave them. The family spent it in a way that you would never have spent and God never intended it. Verse 76 tells you to invest it in a way that will meet it up there and get the eternal. The Lord gave! That would be right, wouldn't it?
We would all acknowledge what we have. The Lord gave. He delights to give. We received it.
So, the Lord has taken away the same right, the same gift of that. Is that right? Watch now.
Blessed be the name of the Lord. Satan says, take the things away and they'll curse you. God bless you. And all the man's blessing God.
Thus, your sin not your child, God foolish. Way in the distance, maybe you won't hear it. Way in the distance, there are three tears in heaven. The first one has gone to God, but it's only halfway. Chapter 2, please. Right? Verse 2, Satan arrived again. Sons of God. The Lord says to him, from when comest thou? He gives the same answer. He says nothing about his failure. All right? He says nothing about his failure. All the other folk. All right? Hover around life. All right? Solicitors, doctors, a lot, we only hear about the success. We never hear about the failure. Satan's not mentioning the failure. He's never mentioned. Now, but God says to him, just a minute.
I shall not consider myself a job.
Well, it's a good job. Honey, a good job didn't heal, wasn't it? You could say, no, Lord, listen, I've had about enough. I can't take any more. Says, Lord, hast not thou considered myself a job? None like him in the perfect and upright man, feareth God, abstaineth from evil. And still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him, without cause. He won't talk about his failure, but God will. Says he's healed. He's still there, he's still the same man. Well, that's good. That's good. When circumstances don't change a man. Now let's see this conversation. Listen again now, you see satanic psychology. This is quite an education, isn't it? Listen to him now. He says, verse 4, skin for skin, all that a man has will he give for his life. Put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will cast thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. What then? Now what? To the next conversation. Now here is the second line of satanic psychology. Says the devil to him, listen, skin for skin. All a man has will be good for his life. Well, I reckon he's quoting some proverb. Not knowing you and I, skin for skin. I don't know the background of the proverb, but I think I know what it means. Skin for skin. All that a man has will be good for his life. I think what he's saying is this, now just a minute now. We've pierced the first skin. We've pierced the first skin of sin. Now I admit, I'm surprised. I didn't think he would come through. Let's pierce the second skin. And let's get at the man himself. Let's get at him. Let us get at his bones and his flesh. Let's touch his body. See, if you want custody to thy face, all I see the Lord. That means, would you allow me to give you a little insight into what this man suffered physically? What Satan put him through? And that means, will you? Chapter 2 here, verse 7. He went forth, Satan, from the presence of the Lord, and smote Job with sore boils from the side of his sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And Job took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes from the two things. Verse 7, boils, inflamed, eruptions. Alright? Verse 8, intense itching. Got that? Boils all over, inflamed, eruptions. Terrible itch in the skin. You ever seen someone talk to you about that? Turn now to chapter 7, will you?
16:4. Close of the verse. Weary some nights are appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I rise and the night be gone? I'm full of tossing to and fro until the dawning of the day. Have you got that? Long, sleepless night. Verse 5. My flesh is clothed with worms and clods of dust. And my skin is broken and become loathsome. Have you got it? Maggots in ulcers. Verse 14. Then thou scarest me with dreams and terrifiest me through visions. Nightmares. Nightmares. Come now, light over, please, to chapter 30, will you? Verse 17. My bones are pierced in me in the night season. My sinews take no rest, the erosion of bones. Verse 27. My bowels boiled and rested not. The days of affliction prevented me intestinal discomfort. Verse 13. My skin is black upon me. My bones are burned with heat. The blackening and peeling of the skin. A burning fever. You put all that together. That's where this man is from. That leads back now to chapter 2, will you? That's right. Then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. As he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips? In the end, his wife turns against him. She's lost her faith. Now, hold on. Stop. I don't hold any brief for Job's life. That's it. I want you to notice that she never broke down when the business failed and the family was failing. She only seemed to break when the hand of God seemed to touch him. Not many would have gone through so much, but in the end she broke down. She had given up her faith and she wanted him to get her up and come God and die. God's forsaken me. Oh no. You know, there was a sense in which Job went through experiences and no doubt in his soul he's saying, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? But God hadn't forsaken him. Now his wife was turned against him. She must have had a very insensitive spirit that could have spit out vicious words like this. In the day when he needed her most, she turned her back. He says, you speak with some of the ungodly. Say, as you begin to realize she was no longer lady of the manor, was all this going to be a big embarrassment to her? She had lost her social status and respect. Curse God and die. When you get to the end of the chapter, right away, chapter 42, we are told about the end of it all. Verse 5, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. You know, God has taken them through the universe. He has shown them the sovereignty and might and majesty and creatorial glory of deity. Show them all that.
thing that brought Job to his knees was the vision of God.
I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now I see clearly. I see it all.
Then under the road that leads to God, it's quite
empty. In the end, God will condemn his three friends. Is that right? You understand?
He said, my wrath is kindled against him.
He didn't speak right about me as did my servant Job.
I said, listen. Where you go, he says. He says, Job will pay for you. Bring it up. Then the Lord turned the captivity of Job and yet twice he had the Lord. Say, you might never be called to go through this in this uttermost.
But when the time comes and things begin to run against you, what
will you be no better man than the ungodly the way they react in the solicitude?
Or will you vow to bless the God that has proved so faithful before? And remains immutably the same?
Jesus Christ the same yesterday.
The same in the yesterday of experience, the today of necessity, the tomorrow of expectation, the same immutable, unchanging God. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him.
I don't care what he does for me, I still trust him. Is that right there? Come on, sister. Will you trust him to the bitter end? And never be bitter in your soul.
You know it's the way that I say, when you have tried me, I shall come forth as gold.
How did God feel about it all? You have to wait centuries to know about it. James tells you. You have heard of the patience of Job, and you have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is physical in the presence. Oh, how God felt that. But it was Lord that put him in it.
Am I? And in the midst of all the disconcerting process, you see, if Job had said he could have repented, if this had been a crisis in the family, he could cope. You had to cope with that. Is that right? Something to be cope with. It's not about you sleepless nights even with assembly problems, but you can cope. But when a man knows he's in an experience and he has not sinned, and he's going through the mill and he knows that everybody thinks he has done something wrong. Brothers and sisters, that is solitary action.
Solitary action. He tells you, if you suffer in the wrong doing, but remember when you suffer and you haven't done wrong, that's the road of Christ. That's the road of Calvary. Him that God blesses is of good.
And unblessed who? And all is right
that seems most wrong. My brethren, you have heard of the patience of God.
And you have seen the end of the Lord.
That the Lord is.